let's impact some men today. I think we're going to do a great job.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Modern Man Podcast, where we connect men in pursuit of their potential. Join us as we embrace discomfort, cultivate community, and put wind in each other's sails. Now, if you're ready to take your personal and professional growth to the next level, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to check out the Noble Knights Mastermind Group, where you'll find the support, accountability, and mentorship you need to achieve your goals. Join us and become a part of a community of like-minded men on a mission to improve themselves and elevate their capacity for life. I'm excited to get some wind in our sails today. From Marine business owner, husband, father, co-owner, president, and CEO at White Feather Investments, it is my pleasure to have Edward Buddy Rushing on the podcast. Buddy, how you doing, man?
Awesome. Thank you, brother. Well, I appreciate it. And I just want to say first, like, your mission, your mandate, the thing that you do here to, you know, elevate men and to help them reach their fullest potential, it's unbelievably powerful and important. And I'm honored to be here.
I appreciate it. And it's an honor to have you on the podcast, buddy. And just in our pre-chat and our pre-interview, had a lot of fun. Great getting to know you. And I would love for the audience to have that opportunity as well. So I'm going to step aside, let you take the podcast, take the YouTube video and speak directly to the people. Let them know who you are, what you do. And then we can kind of hop into the conversation after that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I'm 41. And so there's a, you know, lot of life that, you know, you have to talk about. But just very quickly, the high points really or low points of my story are I grew up very poor in East Tennessee as the youngest of five children. And, you know, with all of the challenges that come along with poverty. And, you know, I got a, you know, an unbelievable opportunity to go to college at the Naval Academy in Maryland. Out of high school. And that changed my life forever. I saw, I don't know if you've ever met any midshipmen or been on the campus there, but it's, they're superhumans walking around. Literally, they're the smartest, strongest, like, you know, letter athletes that also are rocket scientists. It's insane, right? And that, to me, I looked around and I was like, whoa, there's a world out here that I never knew existed. And I'm just a tiny fish in it. And so I scraped and clawed, and my hero was Rocky Balboa, not because he was a great boxer, because he wasn't, but he was a great fighter. He was a great warrior. And whatever he got hit with, it never stopped him. And I assumed that mentality at the Naval Academy because I almost failed out a lot. And I scraped and clawed, and I was able to graduate and then get commissioned in the Marine Corps. And that was right around the time Afghanistan and Iraq were raging. So I chose ground because I wanted to lead Marines in combat. And even though I loved the idea of flying, that's what I wanted to do. And so I did get to go to Afghanistan three times and had a career there in the Marine Corps. And then while we were in, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And, you know, I was like, it convinced.
Oh, no.
I did what I was doing, but I had that belief. Right. And, you know, and then there's a whole long story that you can find on other YouTube or other, episodes and podcasts about some of the pitfalls and some of the things we did right and wrong in real estate. But basically, we launched this company and grew it over the time I was in the Marine Corps. And its focus now is helping military and veterans build financial freedom in real estate.
That's amazing.
There you go. Now you're caught up.
That's fantastic. What was the biggest eye opener you found in Rich Dad, Poor Dad? Like, take me to, you know, the buddy going through that book. The brain literally opening up to these possibilities. How did that reshape your world? Because there's a number of areas in your story where you mentioned perspective being changed. Talk about that book and how it opened up your eyes.
Yeah, this is how crazy life is. I was asked that question and I was talking about the answer to that question last month with Sharon Lecter, who co-wrote that with Robert Kiyosaki, right? Yeah. And I was like, I cannot believe that I'm speaking with Sharon Lecter, right? And, you know, and so that's how crazy life can be. But the short answer is there's one part in it where they talk about shifting the question that you ask, or shifting the mindset from I can't afford it to how can I afford it? And the example that he uses is he wanted a Porsche 911 and it was an expensive car. And so normally you think, oh, that's too expensive, I can't afford it. or below my means and not buy luxuries that I can't afford. That makes sense, right? That mentality makes sense. But that mentality also shuts down any possibility of you getting that because you can't afford it. But if instead you ask, how can I afford it? How could I? And in his example, he said, well, I'm going to wait and I'm going to make investments. And when the passive income from that investment equals the car payment, then I'll go get the car that's paid for by my investments. So that stuck with me. And I forever since then, you'll hear this. Like if you get to know me better, you'll hear that I never say something can't be done. I reframe it in a way that I created a word. I don't think it's a real word. Everything's figure outable, right? Everything. Everything is figure outable. No challenge, no goal, no anything is like too impossible. It might not be the right goal for you. It might take too long for you to accomplish it. It might not be what's ultimately building the life of your dreams. If those are the case, then fine, don't scuttle it, right? But if it's something you desperately want and you desperately need in your life, it doesn't matter if you can't afford it. It's figure outable. Like, just start asking the question, how can I make this possible in my life? And that reversal of mindset, honestly, that shifted everything for me.
Yeah. No, I love that. And it sounds like you had the foundation of patience already, because I know a lot of guys have the plan, they have the vision, the mission, and the day in and day out is what kills so many. The gap between here and there, right? The gap between here and the Porsche 911. Well, you know, let me just get the new Honda Civic that came out while I can, instead of waiting, right? Instant gratification. We're in that now. We see it rampant all around us. How do you get to someone and teach them that value of patience, or teach them the opportunity cost of the small wins that they're trying to collect now is going to rob them of that big win that they could potentially have in the future?
I don't think that you can. And there is a way to do this, but I don't think you do it by convincing someone to take to lose things, right? Because as humans, we're primed to be motivated by two factors. One is the avoidance of loss, and one is the anticipatory joy of gain, right? So like, and we are far more wired to hate loss than to love gain. And I tell people all the time, it's like, Ted, all right, if I told you right now, I'm going to send you a check for $10,000. I literally have a check from a closing for $10,000.
So the address is no plan.
So yeah, exactly. So I'm going to send you a check for $10,000. You would feel some kind of way about it. Probably happy, da-da-da. It would last a certain amount of time when you cash it, right? Now I say, instead of doing that, I'm actually going to take $10,000 out of your bank account, right? So you're going to open up your bank account and you're going to see $10,000 less, right? So think about the joy of the potential $10,000 that I'm giving you versus the fear and the anxiety and the loss that you feel when you lose $10,000. It's far more powerful. So whenever you talk to somebody and you say, hey, listen, I need you to put off your goals because and your instant gratification, going to the club tonight and all of that, because you're going to want a better life in the future. All they see is that loss. They don't, the anticipated joy of that gain is far less palpable than the loss right now, which is why budgeting is so difficult for people, right?
Yeah.
So those are critically important things you have to do, but you have to anchor into someone's why and ultimately the vision for their life. They have to anchor into that, and then they have to have strict accountability to get them to do those actions that seem like losses. Okay, so here's what I do. I say, okay, ultimately we have to discover why it is that you're talking to me. Like, what is it about you, right? What in your life? Why are you here? What are you doing this for? And most people don't know. So you just start asking why 4 or 5 times in a row. Why do you do this podcast? Let's try it right here. Why do you do this podcast, Ted?
The vision is connecting men in pursuit of their potential.
Okay, awesome. I think it's a great vision. Why do you want to connect men in pursuit of their potential?
Because mental health disproportionately impacts men, which is reflected by the suicide rate.
Okay. I mean, that's extremely powerful, right? And it's something that, by the way, you don't hear, right?
Yeah.
Why is it important for you? Why are you passionate about helping with mental health, specifically with men, specifically with regards to the potential for suicide?
Well, and I've done this journey before, and I'll cut the prescribed answers. It's personal for me. I've been blessed. I've been lucky. My dad's been a great father figure. I walked around a lot with a sense of inadequacy, always feeling insecure of me being good enough. And when I started my personal journey, my personal development journey, No More Mr. Nice Guy, The Mask of Masculinity were two books that helped me step into my competence and confidence. And I identify a lot of men walking around with their insecurities, and I want to alleviate that because I know what it feels like.
Yeah. Awesome. So the fact that I have chills running down my spine right now suggests that what we just spoke about is your why. And it also, because when you talk about your why, when you talk about the thing that you are passionate about, and it's always rooted in emotion, it's never rooted in material things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's people focus on those things. Oh, I want to get out of poverty. I want to move out of this neighborhood and get a big, nice house for my mom. And I want to get a nice car. All of those things, they're just manifestations of that desire. They're not what's driving you. What's driving you is always intensely personal, and it's unique to you, and it's emotionally driven. So now that I know that about you, and thank you, by the way, because a lot of people, I could tell you've done this work before because you didn't seize up and shy away. A lot of people do, right? Because it's vulnerable. And we don't know how many millions of people are going to listen to this. It's vulnerable, but I promise you, as a man, as a woman too, but we're speaking about men on this podcast, as a man, especially a powerful man, there is the extreme power to fulfill your potential is in that vulnerability, because it's in that vulnerability that the honesty exists. And it's only in that honesty that you unlock your power, right? Being honest with yourself. And you know, I've talked to you a bit already, and I can tell just by how jacked you are that you're probably a guy that fills up a room. You're probably a guy that's strong in nature, and right? And I'm a Marine. I'm a combat veteran, right? I've been surrounded by alpha males for my whole adult life. I can tell you the real power is when someone is honest with themselves and explores why they're doing what they're doing. And so now let's take it back to and we're not going to do this whole thing, but now that I know your why, what I would do is I would sit and talk to you about what is it that your ideal life looks like. Talk to me specifically. What are you doing when you wake up in the morning? What's your ideal life? Where do you live? What kind of car do you drive? What kind of toys do you have? What people do you have in your life that you love? What are you doing with your money? All of these things, and we get very specific and we create this vision. And then we identify the path. I call it a blueprint, the financial freedom blueprint. We identify the path to get you to that vision. And it can be silly stuff. I wanted to be a season ticket holder, a Chargers season ticket holder, right? But, well, you know, long before I could afford any of that, I was like, I want to make memories with my family growing up and going to football games. And I always was jealous of my friends who had that with their families. That's what it's about. It's the memories, right? That costs money. A stadium seat license for the VIP section at the 50-yard line is $35,000 a seat just for the SSL.
Woo.
Do you say that's too expensive? I can't afford it? No. You say, how can I? Well, you know, and then you go about building businesses and making investments and doing side hustles and all this other stuff. And then eventually you pluck that off of your vision board and you plop down the money and you start making memories. That's an example of how, right? And it can be small, tiny stuff. My first $1,000, or it can be, I want to meet and marry the love of my life, right?
Yeah.
So what you do is you anchor into that beautiful future that's driven by your why, and keep that in front of you all the time. That's what's going to get you to do the budget. That's what's going to get you to stop going out to the club every night. That's what's going to get you to forego the Honda Civic and just drive your old beater that's paid for until you can take that off of your vision board.
That's amazing, because I think so many of us, we look at our current setup as the enemy, or as the, you know, because I'm here, I can't X, I can't go Y, right? But what you just depicted is not necessarily focusing on the loss. It's just finding what you want more than what you currently have.
Yes.
And being so infatuated with that plan, with that vision, that it becomes, you're more afraid to lose that than gain.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. So you're just flipping the idea of loss on its head, or rather you're bringing that potential future, the loss of that potential future, that life of your dreams, losing that is more painful, right? Mm-hmm. Now, all you're doing is I had somebody tell me this one time. So there was a guy who received the Medal of Honor for just unbelievable heroism. He basically, one of the things he did, they were in an ambush under attack, and he, his weapon jammed, and he picked up an E-tool, which is a shovel, basically, and he went at the enemy, and he ended up saving a bunch of his Marines and you know, and was a hero, right?
Yeah.
And unbelievable courage. And when you ask him, like, why he was willing to do that, why he was that courageous, he said, I was more afraid of letting down my Marines than I was afraid of the enemy. So it wasn't about being a hero and being super brave. It was about being more afraid of that thing than this thing. And so what you're just described is that, but in your life, being more afraid to not pursue the life of your dreams, because that loss is existential. That loss is generational, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you said you had a great father figure in that, and that he, you know, showed you a lot of great things. What if he hadn't been that way? You would not have been the beneficiary of that. What if you and I don't pursue our dreams? I have two kids, a baby girl and a baby boy. And, or she's six now and he's four, but they're still my babies.
Yeah.
What kind of life will they see? Will they get to emulate? Will they have if I don't pursue the life of my dreams? I'm hurting them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, whatever works. And another last thing I will say is get somebody or multiple people in your life that will be on this journey with you, because we're, you know, I mean, I cannot tell you how important it is to have that level of support and accountability from someone other than your spouse, right? Because your spouse is going to be there, but there's certain things that only other men and women, with me, it's almost exclusively, it's not exclusively, but it's mostly military, just because that's my realm. That's, you know what I'm saying? It's military and veterans and things like that. And we're very accountable. We are very accountable people, right? And we'll call you on your BS. And I want you to call me on mine. Right. If I give you a BS excuse as to why I didn't follow through with what I promised, call me on it.
Yeah.
And I promise I'll appreciate it.
100%. And that's why, and you know, with entrepreneurship, we usually start and roll out the things that we wish we had. I have the Noble Knights Mastermind group because these are men I get to speak to every week. Did you do what we said we were going to do? What are the challenges you're facing? And find that community of people to roll with. And I imagine you leaning in towards military because we lean into what we relate to. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with the people who you feel most comfortable with, who you relate the most with, is also who it's easiest to sometimes be vulnerable with. Cause you imagine that they understand your perspective, where you've been, where you've come from. And you said something so profound just before about the alpha males and the strength in which these men have, but the true power coming into the honesty and even the fear of letting down your fellow man more than the fear of the enemy. You know, we know men who come back and they would rather run in the line of fire than face the demons within, face the traumas that we are all running away from. And if we're running away from something, it still controls us, right? So I'm interested to know your insights on how we can build our courage towards that, our courage towards the thing that no matter how far we run, it's still right there with us. It's in us. It's in the shadows of everything we do. It's the demons in the back of our heads. It's that voice that we try to ignore. How do we face that when it just seems so daunting to do so?
If iron sharpens iron, so does one man sharpen another. But if you're a man and you're a loner listening to this, then who sharpens you? What's going on, guys? Ted Thayton here, host of the Modern Man Podcast, also founder of the Noble Knights Mastermind Group. And I'm just out here encouraging you to find your circle. Maybe you're on a personal growth journey and nobody around you understands the new mentality that you're possessing. That's okay. You can find an online community that will pour into you, will navigate your goals and navigate your obstacles, share their experiences, resources, and more. Join the Noble Knights Mastermind Group and try us out for free to tap into a community of men helping each other scale up and reach their goals.
Check out themodernmanpodcast.com.
The best that I've ever experienced is having men that I respect and that I admire lead the way. Okay. So, and I'm speaking now to any man who is either a powerful man or wants to be a powerful man. If you're like me, you don't want to listen to somebody you don't respect. And so you could give me all the advice in the world, but if I look at your life and I don't respect it, I don't admire it, then I personally am probably not going to be like, hey, this is a person who can help. And that's probably wrong. But nevertheless, it's important to be honest. And so you find, and I have found, and God has blessed me with many men in my life that are friends of mine who I do admire and I do respect and I do see what they're doing and how they've been able to overcome some of the challenges that I face. And so it starts with having people that you respect and admire that are cracking this code already, right? That are figuring this out. And none of us have everything figured out. I can tell you, like, without question, I struggle, right? I absolutely struggle. In fact, I am actually, I don't know if you even knew this, but I have a rating, a post-traumatic stress disorder rating from the government. They literally said, hey, this guy has post-traumatic stress, right? And so, you know, no one is completely clean of struggle. And thank God, because struggle is a part of life. And, you know, how boring is a life that's not struggle? There's no struggle in it, right? Yeah. You don't even want to talk to that guy. You're like, okay, great. Awesome. You lead a very clean and a very uninteresting life. Right.
Yeah.
No movies are made about people who just sail through and nothing bad ever happens to them.
Right? Where are the good stories at? Yeah. I want the good stories.
Yeah. I want the good stories. So whenever when you struggle with something or when you have adversity in your life, you know, that is color. That's color in an otherwise black and white tapestry. And so if you look at it like that, then you can look at the potential blessings that overcoming that obstacle or even struggling with that obstacle can provide in your life. And here's the other thing. And I have adopted this mentality because it helps me understand and embrace some of the challenges that I never would have wanted in my life. And you don't ask for them, right? And you don't ask to be pulling dead bodies out of a house, you know, after a landslide. You don't ask to see physical and sexual abuse. You don't ask to see any of violence or any of death. You don't ask for any of that. But it happens. And when it does happen, you have to say, what can I do with this? And General Mattis has a phenomenal take on this. He said, you can have two outcomes to any traumatic engagement. You can have post-traumatic stress or you can have post-traumatic growth. Mm. Because the fact of the matter is that when something tragic or something adverse happens, you can become stronger on the other side of it. You can become more powerful because you went through that. It's just like lifting weights. You're tearing your muscles. You're literally causing trauma to your muscles and they grow stronger because of it. Right?
Yeah.
When they're taken care of properly afterwards. It's the same thing with our minds. Okay. So when something traumatic or something bad or adverse happens and you embrace the idea, I'm going to learn the lesson from this. I'm not going to be ashamed of my failures. I'm going to move forward in this and I'm going to learn from it and grow stronger. And I also now have a relatable story for when people are going through the same thing. So I can be a testament. And in my life, and this is me personally, in my life, you know, I believe that I am here alive for a reason. And what I mean by that is there are multiple things that we can talk about later or we could hit on this podcast where I was inches away from death, most of it in combat. And one decision to turn left versus right coming out of a door and I would have been dead. And so at some point you stop believing in coincidence and, you know, it just doesn't make any sense, right? I'm an analytical mind. It doesn't make any sense to explain everything away with coincidence. And so I then ask myself, okay, then what's the purpose of my life here? And that's what I ultimately try to fulfill each day. And it's inexact. And I screw up many days, right? But you try.
Yeah. I always say on the podcast, listen, I'm still a man on the journey. I'm still figuring it out. And this is where we kind of try and get a little bit closer each and every single time. But I appreciate you sharing that and filling us in on that amazing insight, because I think when it comes to the post-traumatic stress or the post-traumatic growth, one of the things that you hit on perfectly when it comes to the muscles, you said, if taken care of properly afterwards. And with our minds, it's, you know, if taken care of properly afterwards, which you so eloquently followed up with, not be ashamed of my failures. So many of us make a mistake and we identify by it. Myself included, I am terrible when it comes to failure. I used to always think failure was final. I was terrified of it. I was so scared. I would get defensive with any sign of failure. But I had to embrace that and learn how to turn those losses into lessons and grow from them and get to the next level. And for you, leaning into purpose and pouring into so many others, you mentioned it on the beginning of the podcast. And one of the questions I will ask that I did write down was, how did you go from poverty and food stamps to generational wealth? Because you mentioned first getting into the academy, seeing a world you never knew, and reading this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, your eyes being opened. There are many instances in our lives that if we pay close enough attention, we can change our perspective, which can change our actions, which can change the trajectory of where we go. How has the trajectory changes in your life led you to where you are now? And what do you hope that new trajectory does for others that can, that decide or consider following you?
Yeah. And well, you hit it with the perspective change. And that I, for me, I was being driven by pain mostly. It was just the pain of poverty. And I never wanted to have to experience all of the negative things. Being poor is not a problem. Like, it's not just in general, being poor, you lead a simple life, you know, and everything like that. It's all of the stuff that comes along with being poor that hurts so much. It's the lack of opportunity and the lack of options and the lack of perceived value. And especially whenever adults have that same struggle and they feel like they're failing their children, oftentimes they try to mask that feeling of inadequacy with something. And normally it's a negative thing. It's either lying or it's abuse or it's substance abuse, right? Alcoholism and everything. And normally you see some semblance of all of that all around you. It's drug abuse, right? And poor people's drug is tip. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, you couldn't afford cocaine. So people would cook crystal meth. And it sounds terrible. It's like this whole sort of stereotype of this cooking crystal meth in a trailer, but it happens. And it happens because they don't have money for other ways to, like, people would huff. They literally would huff gas. Do you know how corrosive and toxic and horrible it is to huffing gas? Like, literally from a gas tank, right? And it's like, just to escape the reality for a bit, right? And so when you see all of that kind of stuff happen, it hurts and it sucks and you don't want any part of it. So the fear of going back to that and the fear of, that's what kept me at the academy. I almost failed out of the academy, but the prospect of going back to my hometown and working at Co-op or Walmart and living that life scared me so much more than calculus or chemistry or whatever, right? And so yeah. I doubled down and I studied as hard as I could, and I got all the help that I could to scrape my way through what is a very difficult academy. It was, for me, it was very, very difficult, right? But that was the fear that drove me. So, you know, so the mindset itself, for me, I always had this, I need to do something. The book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, gave me the vehicle of real estate. Now, I didn't do much more than that, to be honest. I ended up making terrible mistakes and lost a lot of money and had to get more education, because the Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a mindset book. It's not a strategy. It's not really a tactics book, right? Yeah. It has some tactics in it, but I needed to learn those tactics the hard way, and I learned them over time. But I will tell you, here's the one thing. The short answer to your question is the difference between poverty and generational wealth is consistent action. Consistent action over a long period of time. When people look at the fact that over the last 5 years, White Feather has blown up and our membership has purchased over $1 billion of real estate in the last 5 years. That's a crazy number for about 500 normal military and veteran people. We're not silver spoon babies, right? Yeah. That's a huge number for such a small group. But everybody looks at that and says, oh, wow, you guys just blew up. Bro, 10 years prior to that, we were buying single family homes for $60,000 in the desert and losing money on them while we worked for 40 hours straight painting them and scraping the popcorn ceiling and, you know, like it, getting scammed and all of this stuff. I could fill you in on a million stories of working really, really hard, putting in 8 hour days at work and then 6 hour nights at home and then working every single weekend, every single holiday to try to build this dream. So yeah, it was an overnight success, 15 years in the making, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what it takes, right? It's like you see the tip of the iceberg, which is generational wealth, but you don't see all of the hard work and mistakes and failures and embarrassment and shame and, you know, lost money, all of that stuff. So what I'll tell you is how you go from food stamps to generational wealth is you have a mentality of there is no failure in any engagement. I either win or I learn. And because, like you said, I think you said like losses into lessons. I think that's great. That's exactly the same concept. And what you find is when somebody embraces that and they say, it's not that I'm going to ignore it and say I didn't fail. I'm going to say this is a treasure trove of lessons that I now can extract lessons from, that I can teach other people, and that I cannot repeat that same mistake, that I can then be better in the future. And so it really, it's a rep. Any failure is really just, it's like lifting weights. It's a rep, a repetition. It tore me down a little bit. I'm in the middle of a big one right now. And I can promise you this, and you know this probably, Ted, already. You'll have great seasons and you'll have low seasons. And more often than not, you'll have both at once, which is where I am right now. Right? Yeah. You've got checks to the heavens on that I haven't cashed yet. And that's awesome from a big deal that we just did. I also am involved in a development project that interest rates have really, it was a home run grand slam, and now it's maybe a base hit in the near term. I think in the long term, it'll be fine, but we are going to experience pain in the near term because of interest rates and escalating costs and everything. And I look at that and I say, okay, let me extract the lessons that I can from, maybe I could have timed it better. Maybe I could have, you know, not bought 20 lots, instead maybe bought 10, right? Like something like that. And at the same time, figure out how to extricate myself from this while minimizing pain and maximizing the, right? Instead of just being down on myself, oh, this sucks and I made a mistake. And that's when you sit in the failure. Yeah. Don't sit in the failure. You're going to have them, lots of them, but don't sit in them. Learn the lesson from them. Remember that it's independent of you. Right? Your worth and your destiny, it's independent of individual mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when you keep that kind of mindset and take consistent action for long periods of time, eventually you're going to break through.
Yeah. No, that's amazing, because I think when I unpacked my fear of failure, it wasn't so much the failure I was so afraid of. It was what other people thought of my failure.
Yes, 100%. It's status. All it is ego and status. That's it.
Yeah.
Dude, you're because we, and this is for every guy that's out there, as and if you're like me, I'll just speak for me because I don't want to speak for anybody else. But if you're like me, you care very much what the people that you care about think. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me make that clear, right? I honestly don't care. If you don't know me, I don't really care what you think, right? As long as you're not trying to actively hurt me, you do you, boo boo, and I'll do me, right? But if I care about you, if I respect you, I care very much what you think about me. And so I now have this, you know, this group of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of military investors that I've trained that are looking to me for thought leadership and guidance. And so imagine the difficulty it must be whenever I make a mistake or something I do doesn't go the right way, to own up and say, you know what? I messed this up. And I'm going to do everything I can to make it right. Right? Instead of just being the man and, oh, you got all the answers and everything. No, like you can't be like that because it's just not true. You don't have all the answers, you know?
Yeah. No, it's amazing, because that humility is where I think the bond in leadership is actually built, because it's easy to follow a leader that looks like they have it all figured out, but a leader that can gracefully accept failure and grow from it. I mean, that's someone I'll follow into battle. I want to rock with that person.
Absolutely.
Because it's great to follow a leader when it's all going great, but you don't know how they are under fire and chaos. And when you see them navigate that well, I think it makes you want to follow them even more.
100% it does. 100% it does. Yeah. And I've taken those lessons into parenting as well. You know, because my dad, you know, for all of the things that he did really well, I never heard him admit a mistake very much, right? Or like apologize, right? He was a very strong man, like very, you know, my way or the highway, you know, and I have apologized to my children. I have admitted that I made a mistake. And my wife and I, we don't go argue in the other room so the kids don't see it. We like resolve our issues in front of them. Mm-hmm. Right. And we have a very firm, like no physical, like anything during arguments, because I believe that if you break that physical barrier, even if it's like, you know, whatever, it will eventually turn bad. And so we never touch each other. We never throw anything at each other, da, da, da. And we don't use curse words like when we're arguing with each other, like absolutely zero tolerance, because this is just us again. What do we know? But like, I saw what happened when arguments would escalate using curse words and physical touch. It invariably related, you know, resulted in physical violence. And so, you know, we don't do that. We resolve our issues, even if it takes a while, and show our children how you can talk through things and come to an understanding and resolve disputes with love and with care, even with their frustration. And it also shows them that it's okay to be frustrated, right? Because, you know, our little girl, especially, she's 6 years old, and she gets really frustrated sometimes. And it's like, if she never saw somebody, an adult, be frustrated and then resolve it using patience and kindness, then she wouldn't have that roadmap. So, back to your point about leaders, you don't want a leader that's infallible, because there are no such thing as infallible leaders. So if you, so if they're acting like they are, then they have, they're clearly doing it because, in my opinion, they're not comfortable with the idea of failing and growing.
Yeah.
And if they're not, then when they do fail, oh, it's going to be bad.
And you want to watch out. Yeah. You might want to step aside for that one. Buddy, coming up on some of the last few minutes of the podcast, I want to, for anyone listening who wants to take their step towards financial freedom, let's say they're looking at turning their life around, what quick advice, tidbits, strategies, tactics would you provide somebody to get started in the game so 15 years from now they could be the overnight success that you've been?
Yeah. I tell people, so we have a whole framework on this, because everybody thinks that it takes money to make money, right? That's an old saying that is absolutely not true. Maybe it was 50 years ago. It is not true in 2023. It does not take money to make money. It takes knowledge, right? So you have to, which is abundance, right? The information is more abundant than it ever has been. But nevertheless, that is something that we do, is we train on knowledge. It takes knowledge. It takes a network of people that have the resources that you need and have the support that you need to know. And then it takes action. So knowledge, network, and action. And so that's what we provide, is like, well, no, let me caveat. We will provide the knowledge and we will provide the network. We will not ever provide the action. You have to bring that. And if that's something that you're committed to doing, then, you know, I mean, we've got so many examples, Ted, of like people who have come in with nothing, and you know, created a guy, Justin Lotby. He came into the network, I guess it was almost a year ago now. And, you know, he had, you know, a few bucks in the bank and a decent job, but really no investments to speak of or anything. And he learned about a strategy called wholesaling, went out and found a portfolio of properties. You can find this on my YouTube or Instagram. It's the stories out there. It's called the Ocean's 11 deal, because it was on Ocean Circle and there were 11 properties. And so, he, you know, he made an offer, made a $5.5 million offer. He didn't have any, he had like 10 grand in the bank. He made a $5.5 million offer, got it under contract, and I'm skipping through the story, but basically got it at a massive discount, and I helped mentor him through it. And then we wholesaled it together, and he made $275,000 in 2 months. In 2 months, using none of his own money, right? So he had the knowledge, he had the network, right? We brought the investors together, we brought the capital and all that stuff. He took the action, and he made $275,000, and he created a property management company, and all the investors wanted him to manage those 11 properties. So he launched a property management company with 11 properties on day one, ended up quitting his job. And now he and his wife and their children live and work from home, and he's pursuing his dream, right? That's so to your point before of, if you're listening to this and you're military or veteran or first responder, family member, something like that, if you or your family have served to protect and preserve this American dream, then you deserve your shot at it. And if you change your mentality, if you're ready to change your mindset and say, how can I pursue the life of my dreams? And you commit yourself to taking action, right? All of the rest of it is here. The knowledge is here. The network is here. And we should be pretty easy to find if I've done my job correctly.
I love that. No, I love that. And how can people find you in terms of doing your job correctly? I got to do mine and make sure I ask for those links.
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on what your platform of choice is. If you just type in Buddy Rushing on Instagram, it should pop up. It's the one with the blue check. I'm Edward Rushing on Facebook. Edward's my actual name. Buddy is my nickname that my wife would not let me let go of.
Salute to Ed.
Yep, to Edward's rocking it out here. You could go to veteransforfinancialfreedom.org or .com. We have both of those. you know, because we have our community, our larger community, and there's several thousand in the community. We call it Veterans for Financial Freedom, like it's police veterans and military veterans and so on. And we're all pursuing financial freedom and helping each other do the same. And then, yeah, you can find me on any of those channels, YouTube, you go to YouTube, all that stuff. I'm, you can put all the links in the show notes if people are interested, I think.
Yeah, I'll have the links in the show notes for folks. They know the routine. If they follow the podcast, they know they just have to open up the description, the show notes, or anything like that, and they get all the links right to you. And they also know the last question that I ask on every episode. And if you need a second to reflect on it, that's no problem. I don't mind the dead space, but it's usually the heaviest question, buddy. And it's, what is something that you've seen or something that's happened to you that shapes the way you view the world as a man?
Something that's happened to me that shapes the way I view the world?
Yes, sir.
When I was in Afghanistan, it was probably a week in country. We were in Southeast Afghanistan in a place called Pektika province, and we were on this combat outpost, and it's basically just HESCO, you know, and then, you know, some buildings inside. There's no top or anything. And so we're walking across, and I was on an embedded training team with the Afghan National Army. And so I was sitting there walking with my interpreter and one other Marine, and then a couple of Afghan soldiers, right? Probably 20 year olds. And we're sitting there walking, and all of a sudden I hear this like shriek, kind of like a mechanical shriek. And this flash of light comes over the top, and this 107 rocket, 107 millimeter Chinese rocket, smashes into a building and explodes. And the shrapnel goes in every direction, and the guy beside me gets disemboweled. And I apologize for the graphic nature of this, but this is what shaped my mindset. And you know, he hit the ground, and we started trying to patch him up and you know, get him to stop the hemorrhaging. And we ended up, the medevac helicopter got called. We ended up putting on a helicopter. He died before the helicopter took off. And so I remember thinking to myself, like, he was inches away from me. I didn't get hit at all. He was inches away from me. And there's absolutely nothing that I could have done differently. Like, my life could have been snuffed out. I could be dead right now just as easily as he is. And so that struck me with two things. One, the awesome fragility of life. Like, it's amazing how fragile our bodies are. It's amazing, right? When in the right circumstances, the right situations, you can die very, very quickly and very easily. So one, that, and then the second part of it was what I mentioned to you before. Why me? Why am I here? Shortly thereafter, another month later, I'm in a different position, and we start getting hit with the Afghans back, or the enemy. We call them the ACM, the Anti-Coalition Militia. The enemy back then, they love using these 107 rockets. They're unguided rockets that you literally put a fuse in, you light the fuse, and then you run away, right? And these big, big steel rockets. And so we just start getting hammered with PKM fire and AK fire and the 107 rockets. This is a month later. And like I told you, I ran out the Kalat door, which is just a mud hut, and the Humvee was over here with the 50 cal to my left. And I should have run to go to the 50 cal, but instead I ran to the wall. And I started using my radio to call in artillery. Well, me turning right, a 107 landed just to the left of the door frame. And I have a picture of it still, of the hole that it made, because I took a picture of it after the fight was over. And many more. A suicide bomber hit the front of our patrol, and like it just absolutely annihilated the first few people. And I normally was in front. I wasn't that day. I mean, over and over, like 82 millimeter mortar or whatever millimeter mortar they were, right at the end of my deployment, we get hit by an absolute mortar barrage. And you know, somehow I didn't. My point in saying all of this, Ted, and there are people that experience way more combat than me. I'm not saying any of that other stuff. I'm just happy to come home, right? But the odds of all of that happening and me still coming through without a scratch, to me, seemed overwhelmingly to point toward some purpose. And that's what I choose to believe. I choose to believe that I have a purpose in this life, and I think it's to help people live kind of like what you're doing, right? It's to help people reach their potential, to help them change their legacy, to make an impact on life. And here's how I'll put it at the end of the day. My pastor said this to me, and I thought it was amazing. He said, I think one of our mandates on this earth is to use our time and our talents here to make our corner of it a little bit more like heaven. And how that looks to you, right? Your why is driving you to help men reach their potential and to be honest with themselves and to overcome mental, you know, challenges and things like that, right? That's how you're making your corner a little bit more like heaven. I'm focusing on helping military and veterans build financial freedom so they can live the American dream they fought to protect. That's how I'm working to make it a little bit more like heaven. And that's what that perspective shift of honestly seeing how fragile life was and then being convinced that my life had a purpose and that's why I was surviving all that stuff. That's what drives me.
Well, Edward Buddy Rushing, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And I want to say wholeheartedly, sincerely, thank you so much for your service. And thank you for the purpose that you're injecting into the world and how you're helping others and helping military veterans find that freedom that they've really put their lives on the line to protect. So I appreciate you for all that work and everything that you do and just how you show up, man. This has been a great conversation. It's been a lot of fun. I know the audience enjoyed it as well. So definitely thankful that we were able to link up on the call today.
Me too. And we need to stay in touch. I love your purpose and anything I can do to help, I will.
Absolutely.
Even if I'm not a part of it. So
yeah, we'll certainly connect after this and I'll share some of the beautiful gems that you left along the way. Cause as I mentioned beforehand, I take notes during these calls, and especially for the listeners at home and anyone watching on YouTube that might be cleaning the apartment or the house or taking care of the kids while listening. We appreciate the support and also the world we never knew, right? Imagining the perspective that we could have when we inject ourselves in a different arena, whether that be a corner of the world that we've never seen, whether it's opening up a book that we've never read, knowing that our perspective can change, which can change the trajectory of our lives. If you're feeling stuck, look this up in Webster's Dictionary, but everything is figureoutable. If it's not a word, I'll petition it to become one, but everything is figureoutable. We only have to anchor ourselves in our why, establish that vision, build it, and get so in love with it that we fear losing that more so than our current situation. And that helps us lean into the patience of that consistent action over the course of years, a long period of time that will lead to the success and the vision that we hope for. The 15-year overnight success that you're looking for comes from that consistent action. And you do that by not sitting on failure, because there is no failure. Focus on knowledge, network, and action in order to make money, two of which is provided for you with White Feather Investments. And of course, if you need more help elevating yourself or making your corner of the world a little bit more like heaven, I encourage you to reach out to Edward Buddy Rushing, who is doing the same for himself. Guys, thank you for making it to the end of the episode. We appreciate you. As we always say, make sure you hit that like button, that subscribe button. Leave us a rating to let us know how we're doing. That's the only way we improve. And the best compliment you can give us is by sharing this with a friend that you know can get value from it as well. As we always say at the end of the episode, guys, everybody wants the sunshine, but they don't want the rain. But you can't get the pleasure without first the pain. Let's grow.